Five.
Five. Chris, the topic we'll be discussing today is, how do you make space in your life for gaming when everything's so heavy and bleak?
Oh, jeez.
I'm feeling oppressed just by that topic. But
yeah, yes. I know that is that's good though. It's good. I think this will be a conversation. I'm not going to say it's a good conversation, but it'll be a conversation. Yeah. Hello and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman,
and I'm Andy Rao.
So Andy, that is a heck of a role. So you had prepared a little like new list of topics for us, and I decided to not.
Listeners, that was a genuine role on an actual real table of topics.
Yeah. So I did not read them ahead of time, so I rolled that straight. We didn't fudge that at all. So it is actually probably it's a pretty good segue. So Andy and I were talking about this just before we got on, like maybe an hour ago or something. I sent Andy a message saying that I just wanted to kind of make a statement about sort of role for topic and like inclusivity, in sort of like what we believe, or I guess I'll say like what I believe. Andy can feel free to disagree if he wants to. So I'm going to take a run at this and sort of see if this comes out correctly. I think I want to state sort of in no uncertain terms that if you are trans or non-binary, or you know, if you're queer in any way, like that Role for Topic is a community that is for you, and whatever governments do cannot kind of take away who you are. It's something I feel really strongly about. And we don't say very many like super serious things, I think, on this podcast, but this is something that I want to say in a very serious way, that like we see you. And I know that everybody is kind of going through kind of a lot right now, and you're hurting too. And I want to make sure that like we're here, and that we can kind of provide a little bit of like courage and bravery for you, and even some protection if possible. So that's what I wanted to say. So I don't know, Andy, if you have anything to add.
I agree with all of that wholeheartedly. And I would just say, whoever you are, whatever your circumstances, whatever's going on with you, you deserve to be heard. You deserve a place in this little bizarre hobby we live in. You deserve to have your voice heard, and we welcome you. We celebrate you, whoever you are, and we're so glad that you're part of this community and making it better just by being present in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's all we'll say today, I think, about that, although we are going to be talking about like how to game when everything's so bleak and heavy. But yeah, we just wanted to say that very publicly, I guess. And feel free to reach out if you want to have a discussion about that in any way. But I guess I feel like we've made our position pretty clear at this point on that.
Yeah, literally an hour ago, I read news headlines that spell difficult and stressful times for people that I love dearly. Mm-hmm. And you are welcome here. Yeah. I want to hear your voice.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, with that said, so we have a topic, but I think before we get into that topic, I wanted to just to kind of talk about something maybe a little bit lighter. So right now, Andy, I am reading The Hobbit with my nine-year-old daughter. So we are reading it out loud. Yeah. So we're reading it out
loud. I've been watching The Hobbit movies with my kids. So it's like the same thing, right?
Yeah, exact same thing. Although as we've talked about, reading the Hobbit with a nine-year-old, like it really kind of draws out how silly there's a lot of like little silly moments in The Hobbit that I think as adults, you might sort of like read and like not even, I don't know, clock as being kind of funny or whatever. But like she loves the dwarves' antics and stuff. When we read, I am the one that mostly is reading. I try to do voices and stuff like that. But whenever we hit a song or a riddle or a poem like that, she takes over and she just goes for it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. And she's really excited about it. Like she's, you know, like in The Hobbit, right? Like it's all set in italics and like it's, you know, so she can kind of see it coming up. So we just read the scene where the hobbits are stuck up in the trees, and there's wargs and goblins sort of surrounding them, and there's like, you know, the goblins are creating this fire and they're gonna like light all the trees on fire and stuff, and then the goblins start to sing this song, and she just comes out with like the silliest, squeakiest voice.
Oh, that's
voice amazing. For the goblins. It is just absolutely wonderful. I mean, we're just busting up laughing about it. It's a very serious moment and stuff, but at the same time it's like, you know, it is like a silly
can,
silly
can you still
song.
Sing along to the Rankin bass Hobbit songs?
No, I never
scenes.
I didn't really watch those growing
up.
Oh,
you're in for such a treat. Really look it up on YouTube or whatever.
Yeah.
Because they don't skip the songs, they lean into them and they're delightful.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah, as I think we've talked about on the podcast probably many times, I think these songs and like Lord of the Rings are the thing that now as an adult, like a middle-aged man reading those, like those are the parts that I'm just like, oh, like this is beautiful. Like this is the reason to read this. Whereas the first time I read it when I was younger, it was like, this is so boring. You know, like why do they have these pages and pages of songs? Like this is awful. But yeah, it's good stuff.
I can't overstate how good The Hobbit is as a book. I mean, I love The Lord of the Rings. I'm a Tolkien nerd. But when I read The Hobbit, I always wonder, like, is The Hobbit actually Tolkien's greatest work? It really might be, despite the love we all have for Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, it really might be. And I think what I find really fun is just like how much it sets up for Lord of the Rings as well, right? So like the spoilers for The Hobbit, but like so you know they're stuck by the trees and there's you know the fire is surrounding them and the goblins are like you know they have this great plan to like you know basically burn them up and then feed them to the wargs, which is just awful. And then the Lord of the Eagles shows up and carries them all off, right? So like you start to get these glimpses of like how the world interacts with each other and how Gandalf has sort of been building these relationships that he'll then start to use in the Lord of the Rings to really like force Sauron's hand and like defend Middle Earth and all those things. Right. And it's not it all sort of comes from somewhere. It's not just like, oh, of course Gandalf knows whatever the Lord of the Eagles. It's like, right. Like there's this like history that he's pointing back to. So yeah. I don't know. It's really cool. It's a super good book. If you've never read it, find someone to read it out loud to. I think it works really well as a book to be read out loud as well.
What's always interesting to me about discussions of The Hobbit is, again, just to tie this back into the nominal topic of this podcast, role-playing games, is how low level everything is in The Hobbit.
Yes.
I think Mike Merles, a D&D designer from ages past, recently had a tweet that crossed my paths, and it said something. He was talking about the Dragonlance Chronicles, which are, you know, of course, right up there with The Hobbit in literary merit.
But so good. Yes. Yeah.
But his point was, in the Dragonlance Chronicles, no one does anything that's like mechanically higher than third level in Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah. Yet we have this D&D game that goes up to like level 20. Or 30, depending on your edition. And it's just an interesting thing, you know, like, because The Hobbit, what does Gandalf do when he's up in those trees with the goblins? He lights pine cones on fire
and
throws them at the goblins. That's what he does.
Yeah.
And there's that kind of, quote, power limitation does nothing to impede the delightful story of The Hobbit or the heroic growth story arc of Bilbo the protagonist, right? And so what does that mean for us in D&D land when, like, if you're a level 3 wizard in D&D, you can't do anything, right?
It's interesting, like, so that scene in particular, like I almost grabbed the book to sort of read a passage out loud during the podcast, because there's like such a sense of place and like a setup to what's going on as well, right? It's not just like, oh, they're up in the trees and, you know, Gandalf casts, I don't know, whatever he would, like prestidigitation or something, to light these pine cones on fire to throw them and stuff. Like there's like, you know, there's trees, there's surrounding trees, you have the wargs, you have the goblins and stuff. The goblins start to do something very tactical, right? They put out all the fires except for one and start to make like a ring of fire around our heroes, right? So you have your parties stuck up in these trees. You have no abilities, right? Like you don't have weapons. You have, you know, one wizard who has like no spell slots left, right? Like, you know, so it's sort of like, you know, like, what are you going to do in that situation? And like, it becomes really fun. And like, you know, the answer in this case is that the Lord of the Eagles comes and so helps save you. But like, you know, but like, yeah, it's just like, it's so rich. And like, to your point about like these, like, yeah, like thinking about like it, how you would do that at the table, it's like just really leaning in on the fact that like there can be danger in so many things. Like there is danger in a bunch of wolves trying to attack you, right? Like even if it's just sheer numbers, right? Like if you have a pack of them circling you, right? Like, you know, like you're not gonna be able to take all of them out at once, and you know, one of them can tackle you and take out your wizard or whatever and start chomping at your neck or whatever. But I mean, I think just like leaning into maybe some of like some of the realism there, it could probably be pretty helpful for your games. So.
And I think, you know, the Deus Ex Machina of the Eagles showing up and saving them would be frowned on by every writer of like D&D advice I've ever read in my entire mm-hmm. life. Like, don't let that happen. Don't have the GM step in and save the characters, right?
Yeah.
But that's what happens in The Hobbit. And when it happens in The Hobbit, it feels great, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, you're not bitter at Tolkien for employing the literary technique of the Deus Ex Machina to save his heroes from danger that they can't get out of themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you did it in D&D game, you would feel bad as a GM for doing it, and your players would secretly resent you, right?
Yes, they would. Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't really have a point here except to say, this is in the course of this podcast, Chris. You know, we've talked a lot about books that we're reading and the stories that we tell and how they relate or don't relate to role playing games, but the Deus Ex Machina is something that is, I think, widely considered a fun killer in role-playing that mm-hmm. is part of most of our favorite actual pieces of literature that inspired this game we're playing.
Yeah, absolutely. It sort of makes me wonder, and I'm sure there are systems that have played with this, about if you had like a once a game or like once a chapter thing that the table could decide on, like, we need to play our Deus Ex Machina card, right, or whatever, like, use that ability. Right. And then the GM or whatever, like, you can sort of recommend, like, and this is sort of like how we want to get out of this thing. But like, I mean, I think the thing to point back to, especially with like the Lord of the Eagles showing up, is like, it is something that it does save them from certain doom, like it saves them from a total party kill for sure. Although, you know, like, there's probably ways that it could have worked out better. Right. Like, even Tolkien says that if Gandalf had jumped down, like, he would have jumped down like a thunderbolt and killed, you know, many of the goblins and stuff before he died.
Yeah.
Right. Like you almost play that card, and it's like, then the Lord of the Eagles, you know, the Eagles come, they kind of take you out of that situation, but then they propel the plot forward. Right. They bring them out and pass the mountains at that point. Like, right. So they take them on their journey, like, kind of further, you know, further on. It's not like the Eagles kill the goblins, you know, pick them up, drop them directly into, you know, Smaug's lair and kill Smaug for him too. Right. It's like, there's like, it's part of the journey. It's not the final step of the journey.
Yeah. There is also the sense that the Eagles showing up like they do feels a little bit like a reward to the heroes for being heroes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how you would, like, it almost feels like something where you could build up, you know, the ability in an RPG to invoke a Deus Ex Machina if you've been doing the part that's been laid out for you. If you've been playing that part faithfully the way Bilbo has, and that, you know, to a lesser extent the dwarves have, it feels okay in literature when that happens, because, I mean, to some extent, you know, Bilbo deserves to be saved, right?
Mm-hmm.
He deserves to be saved from the orcs. It doesn't feel random when the Eagles come in. They're coming in because this is a person whose story is worth perpetuating, and we want to see what more awaits this character. So,
yeah. There's a thing to say to your players, is like, you need to create characters that are worth saving and have a story worth telling. But it's like, I mean, it's sort of true. It's right. It's like, you know, like, are you actually heroes? Right. Like, that's sort of the big question I think that every table needs to ask themselves.
I mean,
maybe
once a session, if not more.
Yeah.
The Eagles don't show up to save a band of like thugs and murderers, right?
Yeah.
They show up to save Bilbo and the dwarves specifically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so. they don't show up to take the goblin side.
I have some fan fiction in which I explore that ultimate timeline. But yes.
Okay, all right. Well, we've talked kind of at length about that particular scene in The Hobbit. I think it's good. It does have me sort of wondering about like what are ways you could sort of give your party access to like more powerful factions almost that they could call upon. In a time of need, like a faction that is so powerful that it is not sort of worth their time to be involved in the minutia or the day to day of the adventure, but they could show up for sort of those big moments to help out.
It reminds me of something in the game Baldur's Gate 3, the video game. Mm-hmm. There is it's been a little while since I've played it, but there is either an ability or an object that you can get to invoke divine aid exactly once. Like, I've never used it. I don't know what happens when you use it.
Yeah.
It's probably just like a +5 bonus to your attack roll or something like that. But But it's that it really intrigued me when I got it in Baldur's Gate 3. Like, whoa, I have the ability to like break the story with something cheesy exactly once. Like, I'd better save this up for a great moment. So
yeah, and then you don't use it. It's like, yeah, getting to the end of a Final Fantasy game and having like a 99 mega elixirs sitting in your yes. in your inventory.
Yeah. Yeah, shout out to everyone who ever played all the way through Doom with just the pistol because you didn't want to use the ammo for your better guns.
Yes,
I see. Yeah. You I've been you.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, let's talk about our topic just yes. a little bit. So we don't have a ton of time, but I think this is a very good topic, right? Like, and so just to reread it, you know, how do you make space in your life for gaming when everything's so heavy and bleak? Yeah, so for a lot of us, I think for most of us, like the world right now is very heavy and bleak. It's sort of hard to pay attention to what's going on, at least for me, right? Like, I know my wife and I had dinner earlier and we just sort of like we're talking about, you know, what's going on like right now, right? So we're recording on January 28th of 2025. So the current state of play is that the Trump administration has said that, like, just basically cut off all government funding, right, for any sort of grants and stuff like that. My wife is a grant-funded scientist, so we have a question about whether or not she has funding that's sort of up in the air, right? So like, this is a very very heavy time for us, thinking about that. But I will say, like, when I hit these times, I think for me, what I find that helps me sort of get through is a recognition that like we have to keep going a little bit. And part of keeping going is focusing on the things that do bring us joy. And I've said it before and I will continue to say it for my entire life that like I think play is very important, and especially gaming is really important for me personally. I think probably for everybody. But like playing these games, it's more than just like a diversion for me. Like this is part of life. This is part of life, right? Like this is something that like sort of must be done, and the lack of it would make me very sad. I think and being sad when times are heavy and bleak is not a good combination.
Yeah, I agree. I put this topic on the table, Chris, and I put it on the table in response to a mutual friend of ours who I won't name, but who has been open in our community about having just simply feeling like he lost his mojo sometime. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. And I think politics is one major reason we can sort of start to feel overwhelmed and bleak, but it's not the only reason, you know, like I don't know where you are, listeners, in your life, but like, you know, in my life, I'm trying to navigate. I have a teenager heading into college, so I'm attending profoundly depressing seminars about like how to get financial aid for college and, you know, things like that. And it's all just so, so heavy. And the weight of real life, like the balance of real life versus the balance of like creative fun feels really unbalanced right now. I think I spent our last episode doing a pity party for myself, so I'm hesitant to do it again, but I think a lot of us might reflexively describe role-playing as like a fun diversion, you know, like the sort of thing that you do when you have the capacity for it, but the sort of thing that you maybe is one of the first things you cut when the heaviness of life starts pressing in on your schedule. A thing about role-playing that is different than, say, watching movies or reading books is that role-playing really asks of you to give something. To give your time, to give your energy, to give your creativity. And I think that is a powerful, just again, speaking for myself, that is a powerful, powerful force in my life is when I work to create something that brings me joy.
Yes,
and
yes,
to me, that is in a different category than an escapist. I'm not trying to be snobby here, but it's in a different category than like maybe escapist diversions, like watching a movie to get your mind off of what's going on in the real life or what's going on in your family. Role-playing games are kind of hard work, and especially if you're a GM, as we are, as Chris and I are, and as is sort of the focus of this podcast. So I guess I might challenge you to think, you know, if you're feeling overwhelmed, maybe the solution isn't to look for those like diversions, but to look for things to do. And role-playing is maybe at the very low end of the scale of things that are like important for you to be doing. Like maybe you should, you know, maybe we should be doing something bigger or better. So do those things. But like, if that's not an option right now, or if you're not there right now, creating a role-playing experience for you and your friends is creative work that like strengthens your relationships. It builds your sense of community, and I think it brings a sense of fulfillment to you. And so, I don't know, I guess I'm going on kind of a monologue here, Chris, but mm-hmm. To me, what role-playing offers in this is that the challenge and the rewards of embarking on a creative endeavor.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. Yes. Yeah. I agree with all that. I mean, I think about like, especially in the past few years, like the things that I look back on that I find so creatively fulfilling, but also just like fulfilling as like this is a life experience that I'm happy that I've had, like sort of relate back to role-playing. Like, again, we like the hobby, we're into it and all that. But I think about like the diamond heist that we did at the last Roll for Topicon, right? So like we had a diamond on display and we challenged people to like steal it, right? Like, so, and there's just like, it generated all this extra like energy and interest and fun into the world that like wasn't there ahead of time. And like, I just remember being like so giddy thinking about that while it was happening, and like so happy, right? Like, so it's like, you know, there's that side of it, but there's also like this like really creatively fulfilling side of it, like to what you were saying, of just like that is an experience that I will cherish, right? And so many of these games I have those experiences about. Like, I think about like, I don't know, like the first long campaign I ran and like the people that I ran that with, like, and just like how great that was, right? And like, you know, just all these little like one shots that we played. And I think about like the games that I played at like Matt Wilson's table, right? Like, it's like, you know, that right, like it's been like a decade plus like of playing with him and like him and the players there, right? It's just like this really like lovely thing. And it's like, you know, it kind of comes down to like, in some ways it comes down to community too. It's like, right, like you'd mentioned, finding this way to like have such a like pleasurable creative outlet that you get to do with a community of your friends is like, I mean, like, what a gift. Like, I don't know of many other hobbies that are exactly like that.
Diamond heist, that went far beyond you and me having a fun time coming up with mm-hmm. it, you know.
Yeah,
the small amount of work we put into creating that diamond heist opened up opportunities for other people to like engage and mm-hmm. invest and find joy. And I don't know, that's something kind of unique and special.
Mm-hmm. I kind of wonder if that's like, that's sort of like the strength of role-playing games is almost like, so whoever kind of ends up being the forever GM, right, it's almost like your role is creating a space for people to find ways to be creatively engaged and fulfilled in a bit. And like, I mean, we talk about it all the time. It's like, if you give players a problem and you don't have the solution, like that is a recipe for surprise and delight. And like, you just like, it's very generative when it comes down to it, right? Like you give your friends like this like kind of silly little problem and like kind of sort of watch their creativity go. And that is like, I mean, you're talking about like when things are heavy and bleak, it's like, you know, give your friends dumb challenges, right? Like, yes. You know, like get to kind of see how they might overcome them. It's like, that is like such a silly thing. But I think it also speaks to like, especially when you're feeling powerless in other areas, like, I mean, your power fantasy can be that, like, let's get together and like have a problem that we can solve together that is sort of discreet and small. Like that, like it doesn't need to be like a let's get together and sort of gripe about politics for 3 hours, you know, at night. It's like, let's get together and do this thing that is like, that is fulfilling to like our hearts and like our minds and our souls.
You don't know. I've spent many weeks feeling in the doldrums as a GM, but even just talking about this with you, Chris, I mean, maybe by diving into the role of being a GM and pitching something, I mean, maybe my players need that right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's something that I will never know, that they need that creative outlet that they won't get if I don't step up and say, hey guys, why don't we meet next Friday and play some D&D mm-hmm. or something like that, you know? So
yeah.
I don't know. I think that that has value. I, you know, there's a lot of stuff that has value in this life, and mm-hmm. and you need to weigh that all and figure it out yourself. But I think this hobby is legitimately important and a legitimate channel that you can find meaning and satisfaction and be a blessing to the people around you in your life. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Oh, that's good. All right. Well, let's leave it there. Yep. Yeah, I guess in short, the GM advice podcast says to go GM,
but yes.
That's, I think that is A-okay. Yeah. So it's a good discussion, Andy. Yeah. Thank you for creating that table. And I'm really glad that we rolled that one. All right. So we have been Roll for Topic. We're part of the Roll for It Media Podcasting Network, our sister show, The Splat Book with John Corey. And Jess and Ben is great. You can go listen to it at thesplatbook.com. I also want to shout out Zombie Strains. This is Andy and John's side project. I forgot to do it last time. Let's see. I think you were on episode 3 out now?
Episode 4 comes out very soon.
Okay. And I don't even know if I'm allowed to say the name of the movie that's for episode 4, right? Is it just Maniacs or is it Sex Maniacs?
I was released as Maniac, and then to try and, I think, drum up audiences, they added the word sex to the title.
Okay. All right. Cool.
As well.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So to back up a step, so Zombie Strains is a movie podcast where John and Andy are taking on the Sisyphean task of watching and reviewing every single zombie movie that has ever come out. So it is great. I mean, you know, I could listen to you guys talk about anything, but I think you are particularly well suited to talk about zombie movies. It's great. So go listen to it. I think, let's see, you have a website, right? Is it zombiestrains.com?
Zombiestrainspodcast.com, I think, is the URL.
Okay, you should probably know that.
This is the professional project that you're dealing with here, Chris.
Yeah. Yeah, do a Google search. You'll find it. But make sure you put podcasts in there. As I think I noted on Discord, I am a sweet summer child. So when I searched for Zombie Strains, I found all sorts of other stuff that I did not know was a thing. So Zombie
Lots
Strains
Lots of marketing cross promotional opportunities for us, I think.
Yes, yeah. All right, okay. Well, I think that does it for us. I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rowe.
Remember, if your players are having fun, you're a great GM.